And often we shy away from these conflicts. We retreat from this kind of questioning, these real, deep existential problems. We cover them over. We distract ourselves from them. And we can think of Buddhism and the spiritual life as somehow meaning avoiding any kind of difficulty, avoiding any kind of tension. Somehow Buddhism should just make everything okay. You know, it just kind of smooths over. No, you're all right, you know. And if you see sometimes somebody going through it in conflict, the tendency is want to kind of smooth it over for them. But it's not actually like that when you get into the Dharma deeply. Because you're looking, whether you know it or not, into the vital matter of birth and death, the great matter of life itself. What Buddhism is doing, what the Dharma does, it gives you the tools, the means to engage with these deep questions in the most creative way. Meditation, through developing awareness, through developing friendliness, it's actually giving us a creative way of engaging with the great matter of birth and death. Spiritual friends, that's what they should be doing as well. These things are kindling in us the interest, the desire to look into life. The Buddha characterized his own search in later life as the Arya Pariyasana, the noble quest, the noble search. Pariyasana is translated as quest or search, but it comes from a root meaning desire, intense desire. His own search was the expression of a profound spiritual interest and spiritual desire, spiritual love, if you like. He speaks, when he talks about the Aryan quest, of searching for an unmade, an unborn, an uncompounded, an unbecome. What does that mean? I remember when I first came across those words, unmade, unborn, uncompounded, unbecome. I just found it completely thrilling. It seems so mysterious. Those of you, you know, this is how Buddhist terminology themselves can become, you know, koans, can become questions calling you to penetrate the mystery. The Buddha had a sense, an intuition, that there's something more than what is simply presented to the senses and the grasping mind, more than a purely material existence. And it's that intuition of the heart that Siddhartha went back to when he sat alone in the forest after giving up his asceticism. He went back to his beginner's mind. He went back to his early experiences. Somehow he'd forgotten that very pure, very fresh spiritual intuition and longing. Somehow he'd got distorted, if you like, on his quest. So he went back, as it were, to that beginner's mind. Back to his fresh, youthful experience, watching the ploughing and how the meditation opened up naturally out of empathy and loving kindness. And it said that he recalled that state, and he entered into it, that dhyana, quite naturally. But the texts say that he didn't cling to it. He didn't kind of settle in it. He somehow had a sense that, well, the thing is not to kind of hold on, not to cling, not to turn it into something other than it is. So it just opened into a deeper meditation. And it went on like this. He's just his meditation opening up. But he had this sense to not cling, to not settle, to enjoy deeply, profoundly, but to let go at the same time. It's a wonderful teaching, a wonderful description. And it went on like this until he actually started to look and see with his profoundly concentrated and expanded mind right into the heart of birth and death. But it all came out of that fresh beginner's mind. Even, it said in the text, just to bring the point home, even with the attainment of enlightenment and his great insight, he says, well, I never let that bliss, that ecstasy that came from that, take me over. So even in enlightenment, there's a letting go. So it's important, this. It's important to come back to our original inspiration, holding it lightly, not clinging to it in a very rigid way, but coming back to our original inspiration, our original faith, our original desire and interest to follow the spiritual life. If you get lost, trace yourself back to your original inspiration.